Good evening and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, Jean-Marc Grodi, here at EWTN. And once again, we have this great opportunity to come together to hear a story of conversion, a story of how the Lord has brought another daughter, in this case, of his back home to the fullness of truth in the Catholic Church. We're very blessed to be here to witness this story. We're joined by Pam Mings, who's a former Pentecostal Baptist. Pam, thanks for being with us tonight.
Oh, thank you, Jean-Marc. I appreciate it.
It's so great to finally have this conversation with you. We've known each other for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You are a member
years,
of the,
yeah,
the Coming Home Network International. You've been to a number of our retreats now.
Many. Uh-huh.
Good friends with
such a blessing. Yeah.
Our team members here. So it's great to, I've heard your story in bits and pieces at retreats and all that.
Uh-huh.
But it's great to kind of get the full thing today. So
yeah, thank you.
For being here. Well, I'll step out of the way. Let's go back to the beginning. And then we put Pentecostal Baptist up there on the screen, and we were chatting, joking beforehand that, you know, there's never a perfect, you know, tagline to put up there.
Exactly. I get it.
But those are a couple of the key words. So take us back to the beginning. And where does it all start?
Well, as a child, I was Baptist.
Yeah.
And the Baptist church was walking distance from our home.
Okay.
And I remember walking to church, to Sunday school, holding my sister, older sister's hand and my brother on the other side. And we would always walk to Sunday school and my mom would meet us for big church later. And that was my childhood. And as a teenager, I kind of fell away. Early 20s, I started going back, but I did not go back to the Baptist church. My sister and brother and sister-in-law and several were going to, it was a Baptist full gospel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where that Pentecostal comes in. And it was definitely Pentecostal when I went in there. And I liked it. I liked the preacher and his wife, and they were very relatable, and I really enjoyed his sermons. And after I'd gone there a while I was pregnant with my first child, I was baptized in that church. And I really enjoyed that one.
What did that look and feel like up to that point? You're Baptist, and now this sort of Pentecostal flavor of Baptist in terms of the worship, in terms of the kinds of beliefs that were emphasized. What do you
mm-hmm.
remember about that?
Mm-hmm. Well. So, hence the reason I am in the Catholic Church now. There were just I embraced what was given to me
sure.
growing up. You know,
yeah.
What you're taught to believe, and that's where I went with that. But there were some things taught always through my life, whether it was Pentecostal or the Baptist or whatever, that I couldn't quite accept.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't quite get my mind around. One big one was first saved, always saved. I mean, once saved, always
right.
saved. I couldn't get my, you know. And we're just not supposed to suffer. We're not supposed to suffer. That's not, you know. And a lot of areas I heard, you know, if you ask for something and do not receive it, well, then what are you doing to keep that, you know, what sin are you doing to keep that from happening? And we're just not supposed to suffer. I had a real hard time with those things, too.
Yeah.
And, the reason I kind of fell away from going to that church is at the time, and this is not something I just always put out there, but it is conducive to the end of my story.
Sure.
So I was in a very abusive marriage.
Mm.
This went on for several years. He was very jealous and this type of thing. So it did not work for me to go to church for that reason. So I didn't. And my kids, as they got older, they went to church with friends. And when at night, I would talk to them about Jesus and we'd read the Bible and everything. But I didn't dare, you know, go to church. And so going forward, I just lived my life. I just lived my life knowing that one day I'm going to be out of this situation. One day I'm going to be out of this bad situation. And God opened that door. God absolutely opened that door and touched me and said, it's time. It's time. And I knew it was time to walk away. I had a dreadful fear of losing my children because I had that threat hanging over me for many years. And so I didn't dare make a move that I was going to lose my children. And quite literally, he opened that door and boy, I went running through it. And so I was separated, divorced, and in process, my three kids. And kind of, I was a little nervous, not because I knew so emphatically that God was the one that opened that door. I was not that afraid to step out on my own now. And one day while just sitting there contemplating this whole new life, scripture was put on to, just kind of laid on me, he who marries a divorced woman, you know, commits adultery. And I thought, what? Where did that come from, you know? And I just kind of pushed that away. And I thought, well, that doesn't feel right. That just kind of hurts. You know, here I am fixed to be divorced. And I just pushed that out of the way. Sometime later, it came upon me again. And I thought, oh, man, I might need to look into that. Why is that bothering me so? So I kind of talked to a couple of family members, a couple of friends, just kind of threw that out there. And they all seemed, not only did I misinterpret that, but that they were offended, you know, that I would even, you know, bring that up.
Where were you living in the, at this time?
At this point, my husband and I had brought our children to East Texas.
Okay. Mm-hmm,
East Texas. We just... born and raised in Arlington, it was just growing by leaps and bounds, and we wanted our kids to be where it was safer, quieter. And so we came to East Texas. Yeah.
And after separation, did you begin attending church again?
I did. Okay. I did. That was a promise I'd made myself, right. And I knew, yeah.
And where was that at?
It was a little Baptist church. Went there for a little while. I went to an Assembly of God. My daughters and I were just bouncing around. My son was grown at this point. And my daughters and I were just going to all these different churches, and it just felt so good. But it didn't feel like home. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't, you know, we just really didn't have our church fit yet. You know, we were just trying out all these churches. And yes, as soon as we were separated, my girls and I went to church and went every Sunday. And so we were trying them out and everything.
Sure.
And as I said, I had mentioned that to some friends and family, and they were not at all accepting of that like I was. So I just didn't bring that up anymore.
They weren't accepting in the sense of?
In the sense of the scripture that I brought up.
Yeah.
You know, a man marries a divorced woman, and he's committing adultery, and it bothered me. I mean, right. I didn't ask for it to happen. It just landed on me, you know. And I also get that, because the vast majority of people out there are divorced, are remarried, and I knew that was, something that they didn't want me to pick at. And so, rocking along with my life, the divorce is not yet over, and I had the word annulment. It just came to me one day, and I thought, I mean, really put on me. And I knew I'd heard that word.
What a strange thing. I mean, because many in our audience who are Catholic are familiar with that word. And we'll talk more about, again, the sacrament of marriage and how the church, you know, understands that and the annulment process, right? Some people are more or less familiar with that.
Uh-huh.
But that's not a word that should have come into your mind for any particular reason.
No, not at all. I barely knew it. You know, When I grew up, I did not know anyone anti-Catholic. They just, I never heard it in my home, never heard it from anyone, and I'm very thankful for that. Mm-hmm. But just little things. I was always fascinated when I would see priests in their collar or nuns in their habits. And just the calendar, Ash Wednesday, you know, what is that? And my mom didn't know what it was. You know, it just has to do with other people's, you know, and at other churches and this kind of stuff. But I just had always had these questions. Filling out, when I had my children, filling out, you know, the hospital report.
Yeah.
What religion are you? And you put whatever. And then the next line said, are you Catholic? And I'm like, what religion are you? Are you Catholic? You know, why is that separate? What is that? So just these little things I've always found so fascinating.
Yeah.
But that was before the internet in the way that it is now. So you didn't just jump on and, you know, check this out.
But like in the old days when you had to just sit with the question.
Exactly,
like,
with the question mark.
I guess I will never know.
I'll never know. But so eventually, I didn't like it always. I, you know, didn't listen very good and paid no attention to that. And it came upon me again just no time later. And I thought, okay, all I know about that is it has to do with marriage. Mm-hmm. It has to do with Catholics. Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. Yeah. I knew one Catholic in my whole life, and it was an older woman that lived down the road and had this big ranch. And so I asked her about it. And she said, well, Pam, I would explain this to you, but I think you should go to church with me and let my priest explain it to you better. I said, okay, because I was all for it. I knew he'd put that on me, so I was just going to do whatever I could to find out what that word meant.
You know? Right.
And so she went out of the country, she and her husband, for a full month. And she said, when I come back, we'll go to the church and find out. Okay. So I took care of her ranch at the time and all these things. But she had a new ranch hand that was coming to take care of the horses. His name was Ken. And when I finally met him, he was Catholic also. He went to her church. He was the choir director. And he got to talking about Catholicism. I didn't even know that word, Catholicism. And he was on fire. He was a man on fire. He'd been Catholic 12, 13 years at that point. I thought, wow. You know, I had quite the relationship with Jesus. I mean, I really did. But I thought, man, he has something that I want to learn about. You know, he is on fire with something. Yeah. And so he just kept talking about the Catholic Church and talking about the Catholic Church. I thought, this is fascinating. Yeah. Well, finally, Nancy and her husband come back from out of the country, and here we go to that church. And there was just something about that church. The people, you know, the people were very warm, but there was just a draw into that Catholic church. It was just something there.
Probably a very different church service than you were familiar with.
Oh, very, very different. Yeah. And that was, I was constantly asking her, what is this? And why is that? Why are they doing that?
What did worship look like as a Baptist or a Pentecostal Baptist that you had been experienced up to this point?
Just a Baptist, as a Baptist, it was quiet.
Okay.
You know, it was quiet. It was reverent. A lot, so many things as a Catholic, I look back and think, well, I would never taught that. Clearly, you know, clearly, we never said the word saints. And Mary was recognized at Christmas, at Christmas in a very short little part. And so that's, and then the Pentecostal Baptist, that was all Pentecostal.
Gotcha.
You know, it was all Pentecostal. It was very, people worshiped, you know, raising their hands and speaking in tongues around the room, and there may be an interpreter and there may be not. And a lot of praise and worship with music in the beginning, a lot of that. And then eventually there would be a sermon. And so it was very different.
Yeah.
Very different than the Baptist and then Baptist Pentecostal. It was both very different.
Okay.
And so when I came into the Catholic Church, just visiting with her to find out what is this word, very different.
Right.
Yeah, very different. The reverence was just amazing. Just the silence at certain times and down on their knees and up again and down again. But it was just so interesting. It was just, I just found it fascinating. And I was constantly asking her about things. And so the first week we did not get to talk to the priest. So we went back the second week. I went with her. We did talk to the priest, and he said, he talked to me a little bit about annulment and explained that, you know, if this is a route you want to go, it is very time consuming and might, you know, it's a lot of detail involved. And well, I knew this wasn't my idea, so I was just going to do whatever it took because this was not my idea.
And how did he explain, you know, what it is? Again, because you're coming at this fresh at this point in your journey, right? You understand what divorce is, you know, in that context, you have this word from Scripture. And so how does he explain what Catholic thinks that annulment is? How does he explain that to you?
Yeah. Because we have to move from the civil union into a union between me, my husband, and God. And that's not to say God's not involved in a Protestant, church wedding, because it's more so of I guess I looked at it more so of that I have God in the center of my marriage, you know. But in the Catholic Church, it's just so different. It's just such a given. You know, he's just so solidly there.
Well, and to see marriage as a sacrament, right?
I was fixing to say the sacrament of it, because in my experience, and so many that I see, marriage as a Protestant is more like a contract. There's just so much not included in that that is in the Catholic Church because it's a sacrament, because it's a beautiful sacrament. And you put a sacrament in there with confirmation, confession, the Eucharist, you know, holy orders. You put marriage in that group. Mm-hmm. Well, how special is that?
Yeah.
You know, it's profound. And so that was really, you know, just such a huge, huge difference for me.
Well, and for those who aren't familiar, again, with maybe coming at this from the outside, you know, for Catholics, a sacrament, right, it's a visible sign of a spiritual reality, you might say. Like, and the key is that God's doing something, right? We receive this from God. It's not a work that we're doing.
Yeah.
It's a work that God's doing. So we approach it. We do it rightly. We use the right words and gestures and, you know, baptism. You know, we have water and the formula and all that. But ultimately, it's not what we're doing. It's that we're submitting to God's plan, and then He does the work.
And that's
He brings
and that's
the grace.
It. That
and so
is
the,
it.
The key with the annulment, right, is this question of, okay, well, wait a minute. If sacrament, if a marriage is really a sacrament, what were the conditions of this marriage? And the Church takes marriage so seriously, it says, okay, what were the conditions of this marriage? Was it truly a sacramental marriage? And that's, again, a whole different the idea that the Church would look at that and investigate that and take it so seriously.
Oh, they do.
Right?
Oh, my goodness, yes. They
it's because
just,
it's such
that's
a,
it.
Such
that's
a
it.
Thing.
And they did. I mean, the annulment is, the process is lengthy.
Right.
You know, that when they sent the packet of questions, the questionnaire to fill out. And it says, if you, you know, if you need more room, go on to another page. When I mailed that in, it was probably that thick, you know, and because they said, be as detailed as you can, you know, because they want to make a good, solid, informed decision. And so I was as detailed as I possibly could. And a lot of it went right back to the very beginning of the, that first marriage.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so it was a lot of things that I came under the heading of many rulings.
Yeah.
Many, to be able to have that annulment.
You know, it strikes me that another aspect of the whole process is precisely this submission to God through His Church. I mean, you mentioned, like, again, giving all this information for the Church to make a decision, right? We approach the Church as God's, you know, Spirit-led institution to tell us what the sacraments are and to help us understand what's even happened. So in the annulment process, right, we're inviting the Church to look at this and determine what was really going on so that it can help you heal and help you move forward.
Well, and it's so funny you said that because after the fact, after it was over, I had sent it off. Months. It took a year and a half.
Okay.
And like I said, I was okay with that because I just knew this is what I was supposed to do. And so one day I just pulled those papers out and started reading and I just started crying because I thought, wow, you know, this is a healing process. It's a huge healing process, putting all of this in such detail.
Right.
And it was truly as if I was reading someone else's story about some other young, naive girl that went into this marriage. It was like I was reading someone else's story. It was like I couldn't believe that was my story.
Yeah.
That was what I went through. Yeah.
So your friend brings you to Mass. You're intrigued by the Mass. You talk to the priest about this process. You start entering this process. Now, bring us up to speed. Like, what are you thinking about Catholicism all this time? Again, because you have this Baptist background. Is this process and learning about marriage and the annulment, like, is this opening your heart to the Catholic Church or opening, bringing up questions? Talk
definitely,
about that a little bit.
Definitely, definitely, because he went one step further.
Sure.
He went one step further and said, and when he explained it and everything, he said, Pam, I think you may learn even more so if you just attended a few RCIA classes.
Ah, good.
And that ding, 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 that's where it, and I said, okay, you know, I didn't know what that was. It was something I never regretted for a second in my life because I went in there and, well, I learned about the Catholic faith and the beauty of it and, you know, founded by Christ back 2,000 years. I mean, just so much, so much. And one of the biggest things was they didn't believe in once saved, always saved. And they, you know, and they explained that. And and that we are, you know, suffering is a part of our life. And, you know, and they explained that. And it was so it was like I could hear big wooden puzzle pieces going click, 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 yes, all down it. And I thought, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. Here it is.
Yeah.
Here it is. I found it. That's just what kept coming to me. I found it.
Yeah.
I found it. I found the answers. Mm-hmm. This is where I belong. This is where everybody belongs. But not everybody's going to.
Yeah.
But yes, it made so much sense, especially a word that, you know, a lot of Protestants have a problem with. Actually, probably a lot of Catholics first coming into the church have a problem with this. I never had a problem with purgatory.
Huh.
I never had a problem with that. Soon as it came up, soon as I learned about it, I thought, there it is.
Because you'd always had a sense of that.
Yes.
You know, with the once saved, always saved. It never sat with you, right? This
exactly.
idea that you just get saved. It's a one-time event. And now none of the rest of your life really matters.
Exactly.
You know?
And mm-hmm.
No, you mm-hmm. had a sense that there was more to this journey, this transformation in Christ than that.
Yes.
And purgatory really follows logically from that.
Yes. You know? Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so if there's once you're saved and you're always saved and that's it, then what?
Right.
Then what? And my son, I think he was like 12, 13 at the time. We were talking. He and my younger daughter wanted to be baptized at a Baptist church that they had gone to with their friends, mm-hmm. and they wanted to be baptized. So I went to that church a couple of times and talked to the preacher about it. And he kept putting it off for one reason, and he'd put it off for another reason. And they really wanted to be baptized, and I really wanted to be baptized. He just wouldn't do it for all these different reasons. And then one day he said, Miss Morrow, I think I just want y'all to join the church first. I just want you to be a part of the church. And I said, I didn't understand why can you just not baptize my children? Because this is what they want. And inside me, I knew this was something very necessary that they wanted and they needed. And so he wanted us to join the church and go to these classes and all this stuff before my children could get baptized.
Yeah.
That just didn't work for me. So it was along about that time that my 12-year-old son said, so you mean that if I ask Jesus into my heart, and I mean it, mm-hmm. you know, and I want to follow him and I mean it, but somewhere, and so I'm saved, but somewhere along the line, I really mess up. I start doing these terrible things, and let's just say I do everything. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm still going to heaven. He said, because I was saved. Mm-hmm. And I'm literally going, and in my head, I'm going, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That just makes no sense.
Right.
That makes no sense. And I'm just looking at him and nodding because it was all I had ever been taught.
Yeah.
It was all I knew.
Right.
Yeah, until I came into the Catholic Church.
As if God sort of takes away your free will after you are saved,
uh-huh.
right? Rather
mm-hmm.
than you continuing in this free journey
uh-huh.
of submitting to the Lord and mm-hmm. submitting to it. Also, another part of it that always struck me, I would imagine this is part of what was, you know, part of your reticence, which is just that, like, I know I need a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
See, the idea that I'm just sort of done. Right?
And that's it.
I'm not ready
that's
to see
it.
The face of God yet. Like, he's got a lot of work to do on
that's
me yet.
That's it. That's it. That's it. That's it. How can I be worthy to go? You know, look at what mm-hmm. I've done. But yeah, yeah, it just did not set with me. And
yeah.
the suffering was, you know, very much explained. I mean, what do we have bringing us closer to Christ than our suffering, mm-hmm. you know? And so it was just, everything was so beautiful. Everything I was learning in RCIA yeah. was so beautiful and made perfect sense. And I yeah. never had a problem with Mary, honoring Mary at all and learning about her
yeah.
and learning about the saints. And so somewhere in that, I'm like, I start without even realizing or acknowledging I am moving myself into the Catholic Church without really giving a lot of thought to it.
Well, let's take a break there.
Okay.
We'll be back in a couple of minutes. And I want to talk just a little bit more about that suffering topic
mm-hmm.
again, because it's something you'd always carried with you as this doubt,
mm-hmm.
this aspect of your Baptist Pentecostal belief that just didn't quite sit,
mm-hmm.
at least how it was expressed or how it was talked about. And then you encounter something very different in the Catholic Church. We're going to talk about that. But it's an important topic, right? Because your story does involve suffering, does involve mm-hmm. this difficulty. And part of it is understanding how does our faith make sense of those parts of life, right? Mm-hmm. We want to have that answer. So let's chat about that when we get back.
Okay.
So
okay.
We'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of Pam's story. Again, if you are on a journey, and we're all on a journey, we want to be praying for you and with you as you continue to follow Christ, as you continue to consider His will and what the next steps are for you in His life. And especially if you're considering becoming Catholic, if you have questions, if you're wrestling with your faith, if you're trying to understand what Catholics believe or what you believe as a non-Catholic Christian or beyond that, we'd love to pray with you. We'd love to help answer your questions, help you find answers, and help just encourage you as you keep taking one step forward with our Lord Jesus Christ and seeking His will in your life. And so check out chnetwork.org. We've got a newsletter. We've got resources. We'd love to, again, encourage you on your continuing journey. But in the meantime, we'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of Pam's story. I'll see you then. Welcome back to the Journey Home program. We're entering the second half of our hour tonight, speaking with Pam Mings. She's a former Pentecostal Baptist you've been sharing your story, Pam, and you have a number of these moments. Actually, it's one thing I was going to ask you about in your story. You had a number of these moments throughout your story where you sort of received a scripture, you received a word, and these are really turning points for you. Mm-hmm. Before we get back into RCAA and some of the topics, some of the things that you discovered there, I just wanted to ask you about, you know, what was your prayer life like as a Baptist growing up? Because obviously, like, those happen in the context of of your relationship of prayer with the Lord.
Sure.
Talk a little bit about that, what that looked like.
I was baptized, as I said, in that Baptist Pentecostal church.
Yeah.
And I think that's, I did have a prayer life up until then, but that was when I just really got much closer to the Lord and a better prayer life. And given what I was destined to go through the next numerous years, that's the only thing that got me through was my relationship with God. So I did have a good relationship with God and prayer life.
Did you mostly pray with Scripture? Was that kind of the mode of praying for you?
No, it was mostly, given what I was going through, it was mostly, it was literally thanking Him for the blessings of my children and get me through another day.
Gotcha.
Just get me through another day.
That's sort of that perpetual practice of the presence of God.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Like Brother
Lawrence
talks
that
about.
That was it.
You know?
Yeah.
Always being in conversation with God. And if I realize that I've wandered away, I just wander right
and
back.
And that's it. That's it. I love it. That's right. That's right.
It's a great practice. And again, that's, you know, the reason I wanted to ask about that is that because when we try to live, we practice living in that mode of just sort of being in the presence of God, being in conversation with Him throughout the ups and downs of our lives, we make ourselves open for God to be able to inspire us.
Exactly.
Right? You know, a scripture here or a word there, or just, you know, bringing to our mind the next step that we're to take.
Exactly.
And so that's a beautiful thing. That's
certainly
something we appreciate as Catholics now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Well, I wanted to pick back up in RCAA because, again, there's a couple topics that you'd mentioned early on that you'd always wrestled with as a Protestant that you found answers for in RCAA. And one, we talked a little bit about a couple of them, but one I wanted to circle back around on is, again, just the suffering topic because your story involves, you know, some suffering, some difficulty, you know.
Yeah.
You said you'd always been a little uncomfortable with how suffering had been seen in your Baptist background, your Protestant background, and then and discovered a difference. Talk a little bit about what that looked like, what you'd been uncomfortable with, and then what you discovered.
Well, as what I was going through in the early marriage and all through my 20s and 30s while raising my kids, like I said, it was abusive. It was abusive and definitely had reasons why I couldn't leave. And I would look at that suffering and I also had a family member, the only person at all that ever knew what really went on and behind the doors, and just was very upset because that person was always right there kind of drilling it in my head. We're not supposed to suffer like this. We're not supposed to suffer like this. And then just growing up and, you know, hearing anything in church, evangelists on television, you know, everything you pray for it, you ask for it, you will get it. You just will. You just believe hard enough and you will get it. And so that was drilled in my head. Well, I prayed constantly for that. When my mom was in the hospital dying of an aneurysm, I dug down with my praying, and I just knew that I was going to pray her right out of that hospital bed. And that didn't happen. She passed away. And I went, that's a whole nother. I went through a stint of a couple of years being so angry with God, so angry with God, which I, you know, obviously I shouldn't have, but it was how I was taught. You know, we're just not supposed to suffer. And if you ask, you will receive, and just, you just have to believe and it'll happen. None of this was happening.
Yeah.
I'm praying hard and I'm going through all this suffering, and I didn't know why, because I wasn't supposed to be. And so whoop, over into the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
The suffering, we're all going to suffer. No one's life is going to be perfect. It's just, that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. Our decisions, for the most part, bring this on, you know.
And sin, first in the general sense. That sin, right? Uh-huh. Like everyone's sin, original sin, and then, but then sometimes, yes, because of our specific decisions.
Yeah, but yes,
but,
exactly.
But having both of those is important, right? Because some of the suffering is right because of my specific decisions, but then some of it is inexplicable for now. Like, Lord, why is this happening?
Exactly, right? Exactly. Mm-hmm. And also coming into the Catholic Church, I didn't ask. See, that's a huge difference. I was just taught this isn't supposed to happen as a Protestant, as a Catholic. This is going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's how you handle it. Yeah. And that was just so eye-opening to me. You know, it is going to happen. Suffering is going to happen.
Right.
From whether it's small or huge, suffering is going to happen. In the Catholic Church, we have that beauty of offering it up with Christ's suffering.
Yeah, that's such a powerful thing. I think that's one of the reasons we keep the crucifix in front of us, right?
Yes, yes.
Because it's going to be a part of life, but Christ has shown us the way.
It is. Yeah. It absolutely is. And that's another thing that was just a difference in any Protestant church. The empty cross is in all of them. Well, in ours, of course, it's the crucifix. Right. And it's, to me, that's just it. Mm. That is it. That's it in a nutshell. That's where it starts. It's where it ends. His sacrifice for us.
Yeah.
I mean, it just is. So why would, if he went through that, he didn't do all of that so that we wouldn't suffer. Mm-hmm. That was not the point. Mm-hmm. It was so that we'd have everlasting life with him. Yeah. And I saw suffering in a whole different, I literally stopped. I never said, as a Catholic, I never said, why me? Mm-hmm. Why me? I would have someone in my family who was always so upset that I was going through this or that. And I would tell her, I never ask that. I never ask why me. Why not me? Why in the world not me? You know? And it was just a huge revelation.
Yeah.
It just was in the suffering. And
Yeah. You mentioned that Mary and the saints weren't a huge deal for you. What did you learn about them and how did it strike you?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I only associated Mary with Christmas.
Right.
I think that was one of the most beautiful parts of coming into the Catholic Church was Mary. And the part she really does play, this huge, huge part, you know, and seeing the relationship between her and Jesus, really paying attention to the wording in the Bible when it comes to her, really paying attention. It's just such a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And she deserves everything we give her. She deserves days of honor. She deserves the rosaries. I mean, I can't go on about it enough. She just deserves everything that Catholicism opens to her. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. She absolutely does.
You know, it strikes me, I hadn't thought about this before, but I think there's a connection between the topic of suffering and how we understand it as Catholics and the topic of the communion of saints and how Catholics understand that in the sense of that word compassion, right, to suffer with, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, again, as a result of sin, you know, general and specific, right, suffering is going to be a part of life. We have to endure it with Christ, you know, eyes on the cross through his grace. But we do that together, right? And when you learn about the saints, you see their example, their witness, which is inspiring, how they dealt with suffering, but also, again, the reality that they're suffering with, or they're with us on the journey, right? They're part of our story.
Exactly.
We're part of theirs.
And I love reading about the saints.
Yeah.
And just, my husband and I have so many books at the house, and I just love reading about them because so many of them were woo, they were characters until they became saints. You know, it inspires hope for all of us.
Right, right.
But it's just fascinating. It's just fascinating. It truly, truly is. It truly is. Yeah.
So you start the enrollment process, or at least you're learning about it, and then you go to RCA. You have a lot of eye-opening things there you discover. Let's pick up on the narrative. What happened next?
In RCIA, and I was so excited about the things I was learning, you know, and I would go home and I really didn't have anybody to share that with because, you know, the friends and family didn't, you know, they weren't into that. They didn't really care to hear that. And so I really just had no one to share that with. And my friend who had originally taken me there, she was my only Catholic friend. So I would talk to her about it and, you know, she would just get excited with me, but that was about it. And Ken, her ranch hand, that was also the choir director at her church, when we were there working at the same time, I would also talk to him about those things. And he was excited, too, but he was very distanced himself. It was as if this is a journey you have to do, you know, especially in the enrollment area. And he didn't want to influence me. He just told me his life. He told me how he felt about Catholicism and taught me a lot. But he stepped back and this is your journey kind of thing. And so we became better friends. And so I really, you know, enjoyed hearing him talk and we do some running around together and, but we kept it strictly friends. We, you know, we knew that that's what we wanted. And so in RCIA class, we just kept going through the motions and I was learning so much. And just at some point I knew this was I started learning. They come into the church and at Easter Vigil. And if you're waiting on annulment, you know, it may take longer and da da da. And so at some point, you know, when I got that annulment started, they told me this is going to take a while. And it did. It took a year and a half. And but that was okay. I was in no hurry. But I was just moving toward that Catholic church. I knew it all through me. I knew I was going to end up Catholic. And I just loved it. I loved the feeling. It was just such a sense of home, just such a sense of home. And my, the teacher, I loved her. It was her and her husband. And in the middle of the year, he passed away very suddenly. She had a lot of health problems. So during that RCIA year, a lot of things were missed and left out because we'd have a lot of, you know, people come in and substitute. So there were several things that kind of got left out. And so Easter Vigil came. Everyone came into the church but me because I was waiting on my annulment. Right. So I was just, I was Catholic except for the, you know, except for the Eucharist. I was, and
a new opportunity to suffer and offer
yes,
it up.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. And so finally on into the summer, I got my annulment. It came through. It was final. I talked to the priest, and we were ready.
And just so everybody understands what that means, right? For the annulment to come through, the church has evaluated your previous marriage and said, this was not a sacramental marriage. Right?
Exactly.
The conditions weren't there for various reasons. This was not. And so the church then declares that it's annulled.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So again, people who aren't familiar
with
that.
Yes, I'm sorry. That's true. No, that's true. It's, yeah, yeah. 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 And I said, I had several factors that brought that annulment to fruition. So yes.
Okay.
And so it's time to come into the church.
Yeah.
And that Sunday came and the priest was at the door and the deacon was behind him and we were getting ready to process. And the deacon turned around and said, they always take the name of your patron saint, write it on a piece of sticky paper and put it on your chest. So when the priest is talking to you, he can call you by that name. Yeah. And he said, who is your patron saint? What? That was one of those things that got missed.
Uh-huh.
And I just looked at him. I said, my what? And he said, your patron saint? I said, I don't even know what you're talking about. So he did a quick, you know, little lesson on that. And I'm just sitting there, eyes this big.
Yeah.
Well, let me back up.
Yeah.
In RCIA, when you go through a rite of acceptance, and you do this at the cathedral where the bishop is. Mm-hmm. Well, when I had decided this is what I was going to do, I'm becoming Catholic, and shortly before the Easter Vigil, maybe 3 weeks, all of us in RCIA, the candidates, went to the cathedral, and we're waiting to see the bishop as a rite of acceptance. Mm-hmm. And we're on this in this little room on the side. And we're just sitting there waiting, and I looked around on this table, and it totally empty table except just a couple of pamphlets sitting there. And it said something about saint, and I thought, well, that's interesting. That little girl's, she's little. She's a little bitty girl, and she's a saint. And I picked up that pamphlet, and they're hollering, we got to go, come on in. So I just stuck it in my purse mm-hmm. and went on. And I had just glanced at it.
Yeah.
Stuck it in there, didn't look at it again. And so all these months later, when I'm standing there and the deacon said, who's your patron saint? And I didn't even know what he was talking about. I just sat there. I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have one. He said, do you know of any saints at all? And I said, no. And then I said, wait a minute. There's this little girl saint. I saw her on a pamphlet. I said, she had a real odd last name. She's a little bitty girl. And he said, Maria Goretti? And I said, that's it. I think that was it. And he said, do you want her to be your patron saint? And I said, yes. So he wrote that down, put it on my chest. Here we went, and we processed in and went through Mass, and then I was confirmed into the church.
Yeah.
And oh, my goodness, it was wonderful. It was so beautiful. Yeah. And so weeks later, mm-hmm. I thought, you know, I should just really drag that pamphlet out and see who my patron saint is. Yeah. And I drag it out and started reading. And I teared up. I just got very teared up. I'm like, what am I doing now? Yeah. But Maria Goretti was the saint of abused people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, she picked me. I didn't pick her. She picked me.
Yeah. Oh, I've heard that story again, and it brings tears in my eyes to hear it again. Beautiful, beautiful thing. Again, it goes back to that topic we were talking about, like, part of the beauty of the communion of saints that we believe in as Catholics is that the saints, they've been through it, and they're still with us. They're still
exactly.
praying for us. You know, in that case, you were
and
chosen.
If nothing
by,
had, yeah. That's it. If nothing had ever pointed to how important the saints are and how involved they are in our lives,
yeah.
that would have definitely been it.
So she was praying yeah. for you all up through
was.
That, you know, as you learned about, you know, the deeper meaning of suffering and how it united with mm-hmm. Christ. You know, what a mm-hmm. what a beautiful thing. Ah, wonderful.
Yeah, was he right?
All right. Well, what happened after that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, after that, I started getting involved in the church, and I taught faith formation, first grade, for several years. And that was just so wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Watching those little bitty kids, they know all their prayers. And they know so many stories about Jesus, and it was just so beautiful to watch.
Yeah.
And then after several years of that, I started teaching confirmation class.
Yeah.
Now, that was in a COVID moment, and so it was a little difficult, and we'd do it one year, we'd stopped the next, we had to change the day, mm-hmm. we had to change the setting of the room. I mean, the whole thing, trying to get through that next year or two.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really sweet too, just teaching those kids and watching those little light bulbs go on. It was beautiful. Yeah, yeah. And so while I was teaching faith confirmation, I started going to RCIA class just because.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, it's 2,000 years steeped. Mm-hmm. And so every time I go, I've gone to RCIA class for years. I still go. And I'm usually somebody's sponsor, mm-hmm. Someone coming into the church. I sponsor them. And that is so beautiful and so fascinating to go to RCIA class mm-hmm. and watch the transformation. You know, you have people that come in that yeah. just, they're there with so-and-so, and they just want to see what so-and-so's learning. And they end up learning more than so-and-so that they came with.
Yeah, yeah.
And they end up coming into the church. And it's so funny to me how many people that set out to prove the Catholic Church wrong mm-hmm. and come into the Catholic Church or
right.
look into Christian history
yeah.
and end up coming into the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
But I love RCIA class because it's like I learn something new every year, and it refreshes, and it's just a beautiful experience, RCIA class.
Yeah.
It just is. And so many people in my church, been Catholic for years, go to RCIA class. They just like that refresher.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. And you continue to be involved in that to this day.
Right? Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. And the RCIA classes are so much like the retreats, the coming home retreats, that I've been to so many.
Oh, yeah.
And they're so wonderful.
How did you first end up on a Coming Home Network retreat? I don't even remember.
Golly, that was 2019. I think we got an email. I mean, we were looking at other things and podcasts, and we ended up getting an email announcing it. And we're like, my friend and I were like, we need to go to that. And we've been going ever since.
Yeah. For those who don't know, the Coming Home Network retreats, we have usually a couple a year that Coming Home Network puts on for converts and those who are on the journey to the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of what we do here. And since we come together, share different parts of our story, the struggles, the ups, the downs, the sufferings, and then again, try to be an encouragement and pray together with those who are still on that journey. So you were able to join us for a number of those.
Oh, very many. Yeah. And that's so wonderful to see people come in. A lot of the great part is a couple comes in, and let's say, one half, they're really interested. They want to learn. And the other half is so irritated, but they're coming in with them. But within that few days, they're on board with them, and they're coming into the Catholic. They're both coming into the Catholic Church, and it's just because it's such a family. You know, when you're thinking of leaving your Baptist Pentecostal Assembly of God, and your whole family is that, and you're thinking of leaving and going anywhere else is one thing, but into the Catholic Church is another.
Right,
it's quite another. And that's a hard, hard thing for a lot of people to do.
Yeah.
And like I said, I never had the anti-Catholic thing in my family. I had one family member who simply said, I don't like it. And I said, I know. And that was all. But he knew I was coming to the Catholic Church, and that was nothing to be said. And no one has ever said anything negative about it. And that's good. But I know so many who suffer greatly.
Right.
Because their family has not accepted it. But they knew, without a doubt, that's the direction they're supposed to go. That's where they're supposed to be. And when you truly know it, you have to do it. You have to. You can't ignore it.
Well, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
We have about 7 minutes left, but there's a couple things I want to make sure that we hit. First of all, we need to know what's the rest of the story with Ken the Ranch Hand.
Ken the Ranch Hand.
Yeah.
Ken and I have been married 18 years.
Ah, wonderful, wonderful.
Eventually, I started going to that church with him.
Yeah.
And by the time the annulment was done, we started officially dating.
Yeah.
And we got married, and we've been married 18 years.
I'm glad to hear about that. Well, then another thing, bring us up to the present in terms of, again, you're involved in RCIA. That's one of your ministries. You've been working with Catholic Charities. That's a great ministry.
Catholic Charities, almost 14 years.
Wonderful.
Yes. I love it. We have many programs. They all help people who can't help themselves, basically. Okay. And on top of that is a disaster program that I coordinate. And sometimes I have to go out of town for a few days and come back. And so whenever we hear a bad storm has hit within our diocese, we have 33 counties in our diocese, so it's pretty big. And whenever we hear a storm's hit, we buckle down and get ready. And a lot of times I'll have to go out of town. A lot of times it's just a day trip, but we help those with disaster, safe baby sleep and hunger relief and rental and utilities, and just goes on and on.
Beautiful ministry there. All right, there are two quick topics. We're going to squeeze them in here toward the end. One, I wanted to circle back around. Again, we talked a little bit about your prayer life. Mm-hmm. Before becoming Catholic, you had this sort of, again, conversation with God throughout your life that you just sort of were raised in, and that it was the context for many times receiving sort of a good word and inspiration from the Lord. Talk about now prayer life as a Catholic, because again, that doesn't negate any of that, but it also connects it to a whole lot of new opportunities. What are some of the aids and devotions and modes of prayer and the sacraments that you've discovered that are now part of your prayer life?
Oh, well, absolutely the rosary.
Yeah.
I have many rosary beads and and they're just, I have all of them blessed, and I take turns using them to pray the rosary. And the rosary, it is such a beautiful thing. It is such a strong and powerful prayer, and is so beautiful in what it encompasses. I love doing the rosary. Mm-hmm. I truly meditate more now than I ever did before. I talk to Mary in such a way. I talk to the saints in such a way. And my Jesus. Talk to my Jesus. Mm-hmm. And it's just a much stricter prayer life. And how I choose to do that, set time for this and set time for that. And my Catholic family, we've made so many friends in the Catholic Church that are, whether or not our church friends, they are our friends outside of church, and we do everything with them. And when we're with them, and I'm not saying this for all Protestants by any stretch, but church was church, and then you're outside of church. And then that's just not so in the family that I have at my church. Mm. I mean, we're just, what we are in the church is what we are out of the church, and we're all about Jesus in the church, and we're all about Jesus out of the church, and we talk about our saints, and we, and prayer, and we'll just stop and pray with each other for whatever has hit us at that moment. Yeah. And it's not an obscure topic that we bring up sometimes.
Right. It's not compartmentalized.
That's it. It is who we are. It is simply who we are. And it shows in everything.
Beautiful.
We hope.
All right. Well, one final topic that I just wanted to bring back around again. We talked about it a good bit throughout the program, but certainly many people who are watching or listening, again, really identify with the journey of suffering, right? Different aspects of your story, whatever. If there's a person who has that, perhaps abuse in their background or difficult marriage or whatever the suffering might be, and they're feeling discouraged, what's a word of encouragement you might give to them in terms of moving forward and pressing on?
If it's a situation that you need to be out of, step out on faith. Okay. And it has to be stepping out in faith. Don't just willy-nilly. You've got to step out on faith because it's in God's timing. A lot of people, I wanted to leave many, many, many times, and that's a whole story in and of itself. But like I said, the day he opened that door and told me it's time, then I knew. Then I knew. My abuse was it was abusive on every level, but I do know women who have been through a lot worse. And if it's a lot worse, then you need to leave, period. You just leave. And there are a lot of shelters that will help you. But you have to step out on faith and let him make those decisions. Follow him. Listen to him. That's the only way you're going to be able to do it. It's the only way you're going to be able to do it. But reaching out to someone else is great.
Yeah.
But you have to listen in here too, because you don't want to make a drastic move that is going to have consequences. You have to follow him and talk to him and step out on faith to get out of that situation.
That's very good. Yeah, it goes back to the couple things we talked about earlier. Again, the suffering with the Lord, walking in faith, listening for him, but also the community, the fellowship, community of saints element.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
Walk in faith, seek out fellow Christians who can encourage
you
in that journey.
That's it. The family. The family. Yeah. That's the Catholic beautiful. Family.
Well, thank you so much, Pam, for coming.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Share your story tonight.
I enjoyed it very much.
And thank you for your continued ministry of RCAA and Catholic Charities, but also just, again, sharing words of encouragement with others who are, again, learning how to suffer with Christ. Learning how to keep pressing on one step at a time. Thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for being here for this episode of the Journey Home program. I pray that Pam's story was an inspiration to you. A couple notes before we go. There's a written version of Pam's story can be found at chnetwork.org/story. It's entitled A Protestant Discovers Annulment. And again, if you prefer reading, you can read that, but it's also easy to share. And again, a very encouraging story for those, in difficult who have been through difficult relationships, who are perhaps dealing with an annulment process. Again, the church takes marriage so seriously as a sacrament that we have this process to even examine a marriage and say, what were the conditions there for it to be a sacrament? What does it really mean? What's the path forward for this person? Because God desires healing and transformation for all of us. And so there, you can always go deeper, and you will never regret going deeply into our Catholic faith, because the Lord is leading us through it, and he gives us such great treasure there. The other thing I just wanted to, we brought up the retreats. If you go to chnetwork.org, we have retreats for converts and those on the journey to the Catholic Church. They're very powerful, a very great opportunity to, exactly what we talked about, to go deep into the Catholic faith, to learn about it, but also to be there with other people who understand what we're going through.
It will make such a difference.
And to encourage us
on
the way.
It sure will.
So check that out at chnetwork.org. Again, we'll be back next week with another story. In the meantime, God bless you, and we'll see you then.